This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
That was Lyra's Theme. That was Lyra, performed by Kate Bush, from the Golden Compass original motion picture soundtrack, music by Alexandre Desplat. And that was from the film that came out, the New Line film that came out in 2007 with Nicole Kidman. Now, it wasn't a great big hit, but certainly fantastic. The books are fantastic, that trilogy. Now, the Golden Compass book was first published back in 1996 by, of course, the wonderful Philip Pullman, part of his Dark Materials. And even though it was adapted into the film, look, I saw it four times at least, three times on DVD and once at the cinema. Even though I was disappointed with the ending and the homogenisation of it, taking out some of the most poignant parts of the story. Even though that happened, oh, his fireworks are going crazy, man. Even though that did happen, I still thought it was a great piece of film. And at this stage, unfortunately, there is no sign of anything being made, like The Subtle Knife or The Amber Spyglass, which was published in the year 2000. So a great way to start the decade of the noughties that we've had. So, yeah, look, Philip Pullman, if you have not read those three books, what are you doing? You must read the Dark Materials series. Golden Compass is fantastic because you can seriously read them again and again and again. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9, and we've got a lovely Happy New Year text. Love you alls. Wish you the best for 2010. That's great. I don't know who you are, but thank you anyway. Good one. All right, now, a lot of people out there enjoying those fireworks. They were great. Now, I want to go back and look at Kaz's top tens, just briefly, because I haven't finished them all yet. The first one I've got here for her top 10 TV shows of the decade. Number one, she's got Doctor Who, and she is a Doctor Who fan. She's got Torchwood, Series 3, Children of Earth, which she says was amazing. Firefly, number three, that's the Joss Whedon mentioned earlier, and I guess, yeah, a sort of a satellite in a way of the Serenity film. Dollhouse, she's got it number four, which unfortunately I've never seen because it's not on free to air at this point, and I don't think it's even out on DVD yet, which is a shame. Life on Mars, the Brit show, brilliant. I didn't think much of the American version, but that's my taste. Merlin, she's got it number six. Farscape, number seven. Battlestar Galactica, number eight, excellent. Being Human, another British production, brilliant, I love that one. And Angel, and she says here, just sneaks in since it began in 1999. Well, fair enough too. And for 2010 and beyond, she's got down here Iron Man 2, so she's obviously looking forward to that. Inception, X-Men First Class, Daybreakers, and that's the Australian production, with vampires and that theme. Legion, Clash of the Titans, so it's the remake with the wonderful Sam Worthington starring in that. Second series of Being Human. Oh, I didn't know there was going to be one. That's exciting. Doctor Who, of course. Misfits. Okay. And her Geek Gods of the Decade. Russell T Davies of Doctor Who. Torchwood and Screenplay, The Second Coming. Davies, she says, is an innovative and committed writer with an ability to convey the most fragile and universal human emotions in a script without losing anything in translation. Without a hint of tokenism, Davies has written gay characters into just about everything he's produced, from children's shows through to his groundbreaking series Queer as Folk. Obviously, that's the British Queer as Folk, which was really cool. I did see that. Actually, it was good. Joss Whedon, Buffy, Angel, Firefly, Dollhouse and Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog. Whedon is an exceptional creative mind, responsible for intelligent television writing and beloved characters. He has moved with the changing times, and much of his dialogue has been popularised and copied, often referred to as Whedon speak or Slayer slang. He's also written an X-Men series, Sorry, X-Men series and Astonishing X-Men. Well, great. Thanks for that, Kaz. Yeah, there's some good ones in there. And hopefully 2010 we will see more great sci-fi and horror coming to a screen near you. You're listening to Sonia and Ross on Joy 94.9 Sci-Fi and Scream.
In space, no one can hear you scream. On Joy 94.9, it's a different story. Sci-Fi and Scream, Thursday nights, 11 to 1, on Joy 94.9.
Welcome back, Sci-Fi and Scream. It's good to have you here with us in the new year. It's quarter past 12. It's amazing how quick this last hour and a bit has gone. Now, just looking at sci-fi news for the decade. Peter Jackson saved sci-fi from the doldrums of stagnancy by backing the big winner of the decade, I believe, for sci-fi genre, and that is producing District 9. And according to Break Media, a Film Junk Online, it looks like Sam Raimi, along with Ghost House Pictures, are getting in on the Peter Jackson campaign to help give a boost up to a filmmaker called Federico Alvarez, a young Uruguayan filmmaker. And he made a film called Panic Attack, which has been spreading across YouTube like wildfire and attracting a lot of attention in Hollywood. Now we have news from the Uruguayan newspaper El País that Alvarez has signed a contract with Sam Raimi's production company and is set to make his feature film debut with a $30 to $40 million science fiction film. Clearly they're hoping this will be the next District 9. Can he deliver? While the original article is in Spanish, the loose translation also tells us that Raimi spoke with Federico Alvarez on the phone for an hour and a half, and the two apparently hit it off. The idea would be for Raimi to shield him from business side of things so he can just go ahead and make this film. And apparently it's not quite clear at the moment what the story will be based on, whether it will be based on the YouTube hit, the Panic Attack that he made. But the project has been developed and yeah, it looks like it is going to happen. So that's something to look forward to in the new decade. And hopefully a lot of filmmakers who've already cut their teeth and done well will start doing a lot more of that sort of production and helping set up new directors. Cool. You're listening to Sonia and Ross, who seems to be getting in on the act over there.
I sure am. What,
you're having a look at something in there. You're
just
getting a bit excited.
Mesmerised by the fireworks.
Yeah,
to be honest,
so loud.
And just perusing a sci-fi magazine that Sonia's lent me for my research purposes, which is entitled Sci-Fi Now. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's just
anything interesting in there?
Well, it's got an article about Ray Wise and Jeepers Creepers 3 and an article about Dario Argento and a new film that is having trouble getting distribution called Giallo, which is Italian for yellow, which is about a jaundiced killer.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Not sure when we'll be seeing that one, but I'm definitely looking forward to it.
When will that come out?
To be honest with you, it'll probably just be a straight-to-DVD affair.
Oh.
Yeah, unfortunately.
I hope not.
Mm.
But they really... Wouldn't it be great if they had a sci-fi and horror cinema in Melbourne?
That would be good.
Because I tell you what, that could be 24/7, that could be.
Yeah.
Back-to-back. Not just like a one-off festival that they have now and then at Acme or up at the Astor. Do you know? But imagine a 24-hour, not 24-hour, but imagine a seven-day-a-weeker cinema just dedicated to the genres.
Yeah.
Dream on, but you never know where your dreams can lead. You're listening to Sonia and Ross on Sci-Fi and Scream, and I'm going to be playing some golden oldies. B-52s, who put on a fantastic gig in December of last decade. And they were great. We saw them, didn't we?
That's right. They were pretty good.
Did you rock Lobster?
I certainly did.
So we're going to play Planet Clear, and it's from their first album. You're listening to Joy 94.9. Welcome back. Welcome back to Sci-Fi and Scream with Ross and Sonia. How is your New Year's Eve going, people? It is, well, it's not the eve anymore. It is the day. Now we are moving into 2010. What does it hold for science fiction goons and creeps and geeks and nerds and nerf herders and trackers and trackies and Star Wars dogs and tweenies and twilights and, twihards, all of us, true blooders. What does it hold? I wonder. hopefully a lot more good things. Now, I'm going to do my top 10 because time is of the essence and we are running out of time here. Okay. Number 10, I have the, well, it's not the, I have Watchmen at number 10, and this is for 2009. Watchmen, the 2009 American superhero film directed by Zack Snyder, which starred Marlon Ackerman, Billy Crudup, Matthew Good, and the wonderful Jackie Earle Haley, who I believe is going to be the new Freddy Krueger in the Freddy Krueger Nightmare on Elm Street remakes or revamps, or whatever they're called. Upgrades, reboots. Jeffrey Dean Morgan and Patrick Wilson, of course. He's pretty amazing too. He's also in it. It's an adaptation of the comic book of the same name by comic book writers and artists Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons from DC Comics. I thought it was amazing. It's set in an alternate history. In 1985, at the height of the Cold War between the United States and the Soviet Union. However, we notice that Nixon is still president. There you go, because the Americans won the war against Vietnam. That's quite an artistic leap, but people have the right to have some artistic license, I guess. Billy Crudup's also quite amazing, all CGI'd in blue as Dr. Manhattan. And, yeah, a pretty interesting film it is too, just with that alternate. I love the opening with Bob Dylan's music, The Times Are A-Changing, and, yeah, there's some very interesting twists in it. It's worth getting out on DVD too if you didn't get to see it on the big screen. But it is good to see on the big screen. Wonderful sound effects too. Number 9, I've got Star Trek, the movie that came out last year, 2009. And that was directed by the very talented J.J. Abrams and written by Roberto Ore, Alex Kurtzman, and Gene Roddenberry also had a bit in there too from the franchise. It starred Chris Pine as a young James T. Kirk and a young Spock played by Zachary Quinto. Eric Bunn is in it as well as a Romulan from their future who threatens the United Federation of Planets, and the wonderful Leonard Nimoy makes an appearance. Good film. Number 8, just for fun, I've got Something, Something, Something Darkseid from the Family Guy franchise. Now, this was actually a television episode, but I haven't seen it on TV here. I had to see it on DVD. It was released on DVD just a few days ago, actually. Well, December the 22nd, to be exact. There you go. And it's an hour-long episode of the Fox animated series Family Guy and the sequel episode to the Star Wars parody Blue Harvest. The episode is a retelling and the parody of the film Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back. Probably my favourite, I reckon. Directed by Dominic Pulcino, and it has little excerpts of Dolph Lundgren as Ivan Draco from one of the Rocky films, and Bridget Nielsen as Ludmilla. Very, very funny. Loved it. And Stewie is little Darth Vader. Very good. Got it, number 7, Terminator Salvation, which I know some people hated, but I actually liked it better than Terminator number 3. This is the 2009 American science fiction film, the fourth installment in the Terminator series, directed by Mick G, starring Christian Bale, Sam Worthington, he's popping up everywhere, and Anton Yelchin, and Bryce Dallas Howard. Of course, she is, who is her father? Let me think. Ron Howard. That's right. Happy days for Ron. And she's lovely. Michael Ironside makes an appearance. He's always worth a good look at. And Helena Bonham Carter. Music by Danny Elfman, who coincidentally did the soundtrack for The Simpsons all those years ago. What I liked about this was the look at the cyborg Marcus Wright, who doesn't know he's a cyborg. He's been executed for crimes, I guess. And he is introduced as this high-tech cyborg who apparently is programmed to kill. To kill John Connor, whom is played by Christian Bale. What is interesting about this is it brings up the whole issue of cyborg rights and such things like that. So, yeah, very interesting. I liked it, and I know it might get me into some sort of trouble. So we've also got Drag Me to Hell, which is pretty silly, but I loved it. Sam Raimi and Ivan Raimi. The plot revolves around a loan officer, Christine Brown, played by Alison Lohman. She does really well. She tries to impress her boss by refusing to extend a loan to a gypsy woman by the name of Mrs. Ganoush. And in retaliation, she places a curse on Christine, which after 3 days of ever-escalating torment, plunge her into the depths of hell to burn for eternity. Directed by Sam Raimi. Produced by Sam Raimi. Associate producer Ivan Raimi. Written by Sam Raimi and Ivan Raimi. Justin Long's in it from Jeepers Creepers 1. Music by Christopher Young. Look, it's not to be taken too seriously, but I really liked it. And what have I got as number six? No, number five, I beg your pardon. The Borrowers, which was made in 2008, but wasn't released in Australia until June 2009. And it went straight to DVD. Directed by J.T. Petty. It's a horror thriller film with a Western theme. So it's basically set in the Dakota Territory, when people are settling that old West part. And the year is 1879. And on the fringes of the civilization, there are these mole-like people who basically suck the life force energy from humans, but only slowly through them slowly rotting in the ground, and then they use them to feed on over a period of a few days. Yeah, interesting. I liked it a lot, and it had Clancy Brown in it and Sean Patrick Thomas. So there you go. And that, even though that came out in 2008, I only saw it released just last year. Then at number four, I've got Blindness, the film, which was released again 2008, but didn't make it to Australian cinemas till this year. It's a 2008 dramatic thriller film, an adaptation of the 1995 novel of the same name by José Saramago, about a society suffering an epidemic of blindness. Now, José Saramago is a Portuguese novelist, a Nobel Prize laureate, a novelist, a playwright, and journalist. He was awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1998, and he founded the National Front for the Defence of Culture in Lisbon in 1992. He lives in the Canary Islands in Spain. Very interesting. Apparently his name means a wild herbaceous plant known in English as the wild radish. Here we go. It was kept as a nickname, and he took it on as his writer's name. Now, Blindness has got the wonderful Danny Glover, who also narrates, Julian Moore, Mark Ruffalo, Gael Garcia Bernal, who's just fantastic as a nasty little criminal. Alice Braga's in it as well. And it's 121 minutes. It's a little long. It's a Brazilian, Canadian, Japanese production. Really liked it. Really good film, actually. I've got that at number four. Number three, I've got Eden Lake, which stars Michael Fassbender and Kelly O'Reilly, who's recently been in the new Sherlock Holmes film, Sherlock Holmes. But seriously, she didn't get enough time to really show her talents, I believe. And it's basically about a nursery teacher called Jenny and her boyfriend Steve, who's Michael Fassbender, go for a romantic weekend in the remote lake country of England, only to be chavved out by some wild, crazy chavs who do just that. And really, it's a pretty horrific account by all accounts, and just shows that, I guess, the violence in England is really starting to affect everything, including film and horror. Directed by James Watkins. Was released in 2008, but again, didn't come here. Straight to DVD, 2009. Number two, I've got Let the Right One In. Amazing Swedish film. It is going to be made into an American version called Let Me In. Directed by the Swede Thomas Alfredson. Based on the novel and screenplay by John Edvard Lindqvist. Stars Kari Hedebrandt, Lena Ledonsson, and Per Ragnar. Excuse my Swedish, I'm not the best with Scandinavian. It was released here in Australia in March of 2009 and was a huge box office hit back in its native Sweden. It really is a great film, really worth seeing. It has won plenty of awards. And the writer John Ajvi Lindqvist, the author of Let the Right One In, born in 1968, he's also a novelist and a short story writer. But he also started out as a stand-up comedian, and a street performer. Interesting. So he's also done books called Handling the Undead, which I read recently. Brilliant. That was published back in 2005. Incidentally, Let the Right One In was published in 2004. And the screenplay for the film is based on the Let the Right One In. But he's a devoted Morrissey fan. And in interviews, he stated that his debut novel's Swedish name got its name from Morrissey's song Let the Right One Slip In. And that was on his Viva Hate album, Morrissey's Viva Hate album, special edition that came out in 1998. So, drum roll, number one for me, and I believe it was up there for Ross as well, District 9. Now, if everyone's going to be nice, Ross is going to do his best at an Afrikaner accent. He's going to, look, he might not be right up to it right at this moment, but we haven't actually heard from Ross for a few minutes now. So, Ross, how's it going over there?
Really good, thanks, Sonia.
On the other side of the microphone.
I've just been listening to basically what you've been saying.
Oh, really? Yeah. You didn't fall asleep?
Yeah. But I'm ready, I'm ready to attempt my Afrikaans accent. Are you ready?
We are waiting.
Okay, and it's in reference to District 9, so here I go.
Go for it. You got to get close to the mic.
The only way I like my prawns is in a tall cocktail glass with seafood sauce, mate.
Oh, I love that.
Thanks.
Can you do another one?
No, that's all I got.
But District 9 is so awesome. I can't rave any more about it because we've been talking about it all night. But District 9, starring the amazing Sholto Copley, who apparently this is his first time being in a feature film.
It's pretty impressive.
It's amazing. I was watching the making of features on the DVD features. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, like, really interesting. Of course, director Neil Blomkamp, written by Blomkamp and Terry Tatchell, like you said before, Wingnut Productions, which is the New Zealand connection with Peter Jackson. Uh-huh. Just fascinating. Like, I've got some trivia here. Do you want me to read out the District 9 trivia?
Yeah, I'd like that.
Hmm. As part of the marketing campaign in the North American and United Kingdom for the film, posters were put up in major cities on bus stops, the sides of buildings, etc., etc., designating areas that were restricted for humans only, with a number to call in order to report non-humans. Hmm. The title of the film was generally not included, although the URL address for the film's official website was. That would have been fun, like seeing posters saying, no loitering allowed, you know. Oh, my God.
That was pretty good.
No, it wasn't.
No, I'm impressed.
Not very good.
No loitering allowed, mate.
The initial premise of the whole film is based on the short film Alive in Joburg, which he made in 2005, Neil Blomkamp, which depicted in a documentary style the struggles of social interaction between aliens and inhabitants of Joburg in South Africa. Interesting. Now, all the shacks in District 9 were actual shacks that exist in a section of Joburg, which were to be evacuated and the residents moved to a better government housing area. So it paralleled the events in the film. Also paralleling in the film, the residents had not actually been moved out before filming began. So that was interesting. The only shack that was created solely for filming was Christopher Johnson's shack. I love Christopher Johnson and his little boy. Mm. Your little baby prawn. There's a little baby, little nipper. You know, got to get the child services, got to take your little baby away.
Uh-oh. I can't imagine that's fun.
Now, we're not taking the mickey out of South Africans because, I mean, I think South Africa has got an amazing history. It really has. I'm not an expert, but anyone that can overcome such a nasty regime, the Broederbond, an apartheid system, and get rid of it and have a great, great man like Nelson Mandela and all the reconciliation, all that sort of stuff, and come out on top and have a World Cup soccer or football to be held in that country, they got plenty to celebrate.
That's right, mate.
Plenty. So we love it. We're not being anti South Africa at all. No way, man. No way. Now, the idea of the prawns being obsessed with cat food came from two inspirations. In impoverished areas of Joburg, Neil Blomkamp would see people selling cheese puffs and other snack foods out of large 3-foot-tall bags, and he wanted the aliens to have a similar cheap food. The decision to make them cat food came from one of the producers who used cat food to bait on his hooks when fishing for prawns in Vancouver. That's not a Canadian accent, by the way. That's interesting.
That is interesting.
Cat food.
I'm surprised to hear that.
After the feature film, based on the Halo 2001 video game series, which was to be directed by Blomkamp, fell through, producer Peter Jackson went to Blomkamp and offered him $30 million to make whatever he wanted, and the result was District 9. Awesome. Now, several Afrikaans curse words can be heard throughout the film, including doos or poos, both of which are slang terms for a vagina. So okay. Just a warning to people out there, that's what that means. And bliksem, which has a variation of meanings. Bliksem can mean to hit or strike, but is often used as an exclamation of wonder, amazement or surprise. Could also be used as a derogatory term when referring to a person, or as a derogatory adjective when used to describe a person or object. Die bliksem prawn would roughly translate to that damn prawn. Also, at some point, a sniper says, "Kom na papa toy," which translates to "come to daddy." Oh. There you go. Crazy. Crazy times.
Fascinating stuff.
Around 6 different endings were created during filming. All of the prawns in the film are CGI, with the sole exception of one, and that's on the operating table in the medical lab. All of the speaking aliens were performed by one actor, Jason Cope, who also played the role of the lead alien, Christopher Johnson. He was the narrator, Gray Bradnam, the sort of left-wing narrator who talks about the conspiracy and what the government is really up to and why they want to get rid of the prawns and things like that. The dialogue for the speaking aliens was ad-libbed by Cope, then dubbed over in post-production with that amazing... you have to get closer. Do it again. Go. Ross is doing a prawn alien.
I'm going to try to do my prawn voice. That's all I got.
I hope people heard that because that was so cool. Oh, dear. The excitement. I think I'm going to play a track. Yep. Let's play some music. I'm going to play a little bit of something a bit different. My Chemical Romance, who probably for the decade did so well. I was going to say this century, but they did very well, and they've got a new album coming out soon. Can't wait for that. They're a lot of fun. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream with Ross and Sonia on Joy 94.9. In space, no one can hear you scream. On Joy 94.9, it's a different story. Sci-Fi and Scream, Thursday nights, 11 to 1, enjoy 94.9. Welcome back to Sci-Fi and Scream with Sonia and Ross, and that was the Temper Trap from their album Conditions, the Australians, actually Melburnians, and that was Resurrection, track 8 on that album. Awesome. Now, beforehand, I was just quickly going over my top 10, and that was for the year. But I'm going to have a look at the top 10 for the decade. All right, and that's quite a job indeed. I've got at number 10, The Orphanage, or El Orfanato, from 2007, with director Juan Antonio Bayona. It was produced by the wonderful Guillermo del Toro, who at the moment is just pre-production for The Hobbit over in New Zealand. I've got The Exorcism of Emily Rose at number 9, 2005, director Scott Derrickson. Great film. Number 8, I've got Stardust from 2007 by director Matthew Vaughn. Now, at number 7, this is controversial, I've got Irreversible, 2010, that came out from French director Gaspar Noé. It's got Monica Bellucci and Vincent Cassel. Now, they pretty much are the Brangelina of France, but to me, they are a lot cooler. She's exquisitely gorgeous, like some goddess from, just another planet in time. And Vincent Cassel is a sexy Frenchman, quite a dude. And they're in that film together. And it is hard to watch, but if you can cope with it, it certainly is worth it. Okay, excellent. And I've got at number six, I've got Let the Right One In. That came out in 2008, director Thomas Alfredson. And now number five, I've got Donnie Darko. Ross, you didn't have Donnie Darko, did you?
No, but it was Why one not? That was of note.
Yeah.
I didn't consider it technically sci-fi, nor did I consider The Internal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind sci-fi. Although, yeah, they would have definitely been on my list as 11 and 12.
Cool. Number four, I've got, this is unusual for me, but I'm going to do it anyway, Bridge to Terabithia, which came out in 2007 with director Agabu Suspo. That's, to me, quite a beautiful little film as far as it looks at and talks about what happens when a young person loses a friend when they're young. And it's based on a book as well. The book was actually written by the author who actually wrote it for his son because he was going through a very similar difficult time. It's a little film. I saw it on DVD, but seriously, it might be for kids, but as far as, you know, that goes, it doesn't really matter. Adults can watch it, and it brings back a lot of memories about loss when you're young. Yeah, so it's based on the book by Catherine Patterson, the novel of the same name, and was distributed by Walt Disney Pictures in the US. The film stars Joss Hutcherson, Anna Sophia Robb, Robert Patrick, Bailey Madison, and Zooey Deschanel goes in there as well. Excellent. What have I got next? I've got number three. I've got 28 Days Later, the 2002 one. I haven't put 28 Weeks Later because, seriously, not as good. Not up to the scratch, I don't think, as the first one with Cillian Murphy. And directed by the amazing and interesting Danny Boyle. Now, Danny, of course, went on to win, which is wonderful, went on to win none other than an Oscar for Slumdog Millionaire last year, so that's interesting. Oh, hey, got a message. Hi, Happy New Year from David in Hobart. Don't forget to mention that the final David Tennant episode goes to air in the UK tonight. In the UK. Woo. Wow. Okay. So in the UK, that's the last of the Doctor Who with David Tennant. That's pretty sad to hear him go. Thanks for that, David from Hobart. Excellent. And I've got another one, a happy 2010, and then some from Dom. Cheers, Dom. I hope you're having a good one, and I hope you've been enjoying New Year's Eve, moving into the new decade. Now, my number two is a little interesting little sleeper of a film, but hardly you never will go to sleep in it, I can tell you. Time of the Wolf came out in 2003, from the wonderful director, Austrian director, Michael Haneke. And it's just incredible. It stars Isabelle Huppert and Beatrice Dahl and Patrice Charoux. Was directed, like I said, 2003, a French-Austrian-German production in French. It's a dystopian apocalyptic drama film directed by the wonderful Michael Haneke, who did Funny Games twice. So he did Funny Games in America in 2008, but then he did Funny Games back in 1997, I believe it was, with the original back in Germany. It's set in an unnamed European country, Time of the Wolf. At an undisclosed time, the film follows the story of a family, George, Anne, who's played by Isabelle Huppert, and their two children, Eva and Ben. Now, a disaster of some type has occurred, of which the audience only knows a little about, something to do with, you know, a disease of some sort and a breakdown of all the infrastructure in general. Oh, and what have I got as number one? I've got Pan's Labyrinth. Have you seen Pan's Labyrinth?
Actually, no, I haven't.
Oh, blasphemer, you blasphemer. Seriously, Pan's Labyrinth must be one of the greatest fantasy films, or fantastical films, as they're called, of probably, yeah, definitely the last decade. It just stood out for me. And I waited ages to finally see it because it didn't have wider release like it should have. Maybe one day it will. I saw it at Acme. Thankfully, they played it. And it came out in 2006, directed by Guillermo del Toro, produced by Guillermo del Toro, and written by, guess who, Guillermo del Toro. Its translation means The Labyrinth of the Fawn. And it's considered a Spanish language fantasy film. He's a Mexican film director, in fact. It takes place in Spain, in May and June 1944, after the Spanish Civil War, during the Franco-repressed era, I should say. And the main character, Ophelia, basically it's a fantasy world or a fantastical world in which it centres around an overgrown, abandoned labyrinth. So it's just a beautiful film. It really is the Wizard of Oz of its time. And there's some Alice in Wonderland parts in there, but some beautiful, beautiful makeup, art, direction is amazing. Cinematography, the whole thing, it's just spellbinding. You really have to see it. It's beautiful. Now, we're almost coming to the end of the show, which is amazing how fast it's gone. But I just have some quick films, what I would call of un high regard for the decade that we just finished with. Some of them are, of course, Shaun of the Dead, the LOTR, the Lord of the Rings franchise. I didn't want to put them in my top 10 because I knew that other people would definitely have them in there. High Tension, which was a horror film made in France with Cécile de France a few years ago. Willard, which starred Crispin Glover. Mulholland Drive. Moon. And, that's just some of the ones that I put down as, if I would go on and on, which I'm prone to do, there would be even more films. And what about you, Ross? Like,
the only ones that I did.
Some that you might have missed out on.
Yeah,
what's the list?
Just to finish off what was in my list, The Ring 2002, The Grudge 2004, Avatar 2009, 28 Days Later, of course, 2002, and Shaun of the Dead 2004. So,
Shaun of the Dead was brilliant, wasn't it?
Mm.
I wanted to put Zombieland in there, but it's still pretty fresh in my mind, so I don't know how it will hold up. Shaun of the Dead still holds up. Zombieland is brilliant. That would probably be one of the best films of 2009. But it didn't make my list. Sorry about that, guys. You're listening to Sonia and Ross. Are you going to do your prawn again, please? One more time.
Okay. The only way I like my prawns is in a tall cocktail glass with seafood sauce, mate.
I love that, Ross. I love that. You've been listening to Ross and Sonia from Sci-Fi and Scream.
Sonia, there are a few more messages.
We've got more messages here. Me, part two. Oh, cool.
That was the previous message about Doctor Who. Yeah.
Happy 2010 and then some. Oh, I think we've had this one. Happy New Year. Thank you so much for doing New Year's Eve. Prepare for laughter, love and song. Dan. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Well, it's good. It's actually good to have some messages, some lovely positive messages like that. Hi, guys. Speaking of Germany, Happy New Year from Munich. Cool. Pretty grey and damp here. Actually, you're lucky. It's been too hot here. It was, 38 degrees today, Ross?
Yeah, it was.
But then it rained intolerable. And it was beautiful.
Yeah.
Still quite a few hours to go till midnight, 9 hours. I'm working on a German train. Oh, all the best, Peter and Douglas. Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Happy New Year, Peter and Douglas.
Yeah. Great. I hope your trains run on time. Ours don't always do that, but you're in Melbourne, do they? And they were packed today. The trains were packed with people getting into the New Year's spirit.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I knew it was a special time of year because people were actually talking to me and I thought...
Being friendly. I know. This time of year, Christmas to New Year, everyone chats and it's nice and wants to shout you this or that or, say hello. Rest of the time, not as open and friendly.
Yeah.
But apparently that's something I need to be more of, according to you, Ross. Open.
That's not what I said at all. However,
think you did, but you've got some sort of amnesia.
I said have an open mind.
Wasn't that the same thing?
No.
Oh.
No. You're implying that I said you were unfriendly and unapproachable, but I'm not. I was saying have an open mind.
No, I didn't think that. But anyway... Thanks. For your messages too.
Yeah, it means a lot.
It does, especially when you think that you're all alone out here in the galaxy far, far away. Yeah,
and we are in a hot box sweating.
It's pretty hot in here.
Like little piglets on New Year's Eve.
But you never know.
It's exciting stuff and I'm hoping there's a lot to look forward to in the two genres.
In 2010, I think there will be. There is some great films coming up. And I've got a list here. Oh, could go on and on. Slither. I forgot about that one.
Slither.
Oh, that's really cool. The alien parasites that feed off people on a farm. It's very funny. You have to get it out on DVD. What else have we got? The Incredibles, that's right. That was a good one. I mean, that was animation, but that's okay.
Nevertheless, yep.
Spider-Man 2, yep, definitely the better than Spider-Man 3. I just didn't get into that dark side of the Force thing with Spider-Man 3.
Oh, that's more up my alley.
The Host, well, that was a great monster film.
To explore definitely one's doppelganger.
Cool, very cool. And Iron Man, I didn't make it to the list. And The Dark Knight, of course, which, of course, had the last of Heath Ledger's great performances. And Wall-E, another Pixar movie.
Yeah.
I didn't pick that one either. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. You chose that one, didn't you?
Yeah.
And so did Kaz.
Yeah.
So we've covered those ones.
Yeah.
Cool. We could go on, couldn't we?
Yep.
All right. Well, it's been great. And I'm going to play some more music, and then you're actually going to hear Nocturnal Transmissions here on Joy, and that will take you through to the wee hours and beyond. So I'm going to play, while we fix that all up for you, Peaches' album from 2009. That was last year, you know. And it's the Cream album, I Feel Cream. It's fabulous. So we'll get that happening for you.
So are you going to play the whole album, Sonia?
Oh, might have to. You've been listening to Sonia
and Ross
on Sci-Fi
and Squeam
on Joy
Melbourne
94.9. Thanks for tuning in and looking forward to a new year, a better year.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.